We also need to make meaning of our lives, and part of that meaning today, and always, includes honoring those that, as many say, have gone on to be with the ancestors. And while I know and I acknowledge that there is not some Unitarian Universalist belief in an afterlife, anyone here that has witnessed death knows that it's a mystery. Those close to death start to pierce the veil between this life and whatever follows, to share time between this tangible world and something else. And sometimes, just at the right time of year, such as now, as autumn moves towards winter, the veil seems a little thinner for us all. So I ask you to take a moment and breathe, to center yourself. And in your heart, invite someone in, a memory, a person to your inner space. And I invite you to let that memory infuse you, your mind, your heart, your spirit. And invite that presence to stay with you for now. And when you're ready, open your eyes and join me in the reading that you'll find in the insert to your order of service. And we're saying this to those people that you're holding in your heart right now. In the struggles we choose for ourselves, in the ways we move forward in our lives and bring our world forward with us, it is right to remember the names of those who gave us strength in this choice of living. It is right to name the power of hard lives well lived. We share a history with those lives. We belong to the same motion. They too were strengthened by what had gone before. They too were drawn on by the vision of what might come to be. Those who lived before us, who struggled for justice and suffered injustice before us, have not melted into the dust and have not disappeared. They are with us still. The lives they lived hold us steady. Their words remind us and call us back to ourselves. Their courage and love evoke our own. We, the living, carry them with us. We are their voices, their hands, and their hearts. We take them with us, and with them choose the deeper path of living. May we honor their memory with our actions, our loves, and our lives. So I'm going to share with you that my older sister, Anna, 18 months older than me, but older, she calls me the angel of death. And she's called me this for more than a decade. And I've shifted from a place of horror and semi-offense to actually appreciating what she's saying and that her words are ones of love and respect. This moniker goes all the way back to the death of our stepmom, Jeannie. And one has to go back even further in time to when Jeannie first met us. We were little. There's a picture of Jeannie making Christmas cookies with all of us. Myself, my two sisters, my two stepbrothers, and my dad and Jeannie's two kids. For those counting, that's seven kids, the oldest at nine, and the youngest less than a year old. And yet in this picture and in this memory, she's smiling. Every one of the kids, myself included, is wearing some amount of flour on our body. I look like I actually rolled in this stuff, but I'm smiling. And Jeannie's dressed up, cigarette in hand, looking every bit the storybook calm, cool, and collected housewife. But this hardly tells the whole story. She was so much more than that. She was a stewardess, when they call them stewardesses. And in that role, she traveled around the world. She was a bank teller and then an operations manager when women weren't getting those jobs. She was also a woman, if I'm to be honest, that was in an abusive relationship with my father. She was a mother, and she was a stepmother, and she was a deeply devoted sister. Jeannie was part of my life actively for 30 years. She died at 56 after a second round of cancer that she chose not to fight. For us, it felt like she was giving up. Her resolve was unshakable, though. She was ready to leave this world for whatever lay beyond. And good Catholic girl that she was, because that's how she defined herself, she was pretty sure there was something on the other side of that veil and that it was good. And she died quickly, fortunately not suffering tremendously in the process. I lived close by and was then myself taking care of my ill wife. And it had been at this bizarre parallel with my father to know that both of us were watching our wives slowly die. So when Jeannie died, I was the first one there. And I did what needed to be done. With love, before the funeral home ever arrived to claim her body, I cleaned her, I dressed her. I talked with her body, and I helped them carry her down the narrow hallway when it was time. And all seven of us, we still miss her. At her birthday, at Mother's Day, at Christmas, we comfort each other and remember her with pictures and stories and, of course, Christmas cookies. And her beautiful, her complicated memory lives on in each of us. So when my own wife died less than a year later, followed by several other losses, I got the name Angel of Death. And it's not because I caused death, in case you're wondering and worrying right now. It's because death doesn't scare me. I'm as comfortable walking into a room with someone dying as someone being born. And I'm talking about this now because at this time of year, death can feel a little bit front and center. Many of us enjoyed ghouls a few nights ago on Halloween or All Hallows Eve. Festivals from Wiccan celebration of Samhain to the Diwali Festival of Lights to Dios de los Muertos, Day of the Dead. This and so many other observances at this time of year are here to pay homage to the connection between those once alive, those alive now, and those not yet a part of this world. The natural world around us is reaffirming that. Life and death and life and death, alternating between seasons of light and growth and the ones of reflection and letting go. And I think it's pretty clear with the amount of leaves on my ground that we're in a letting go season. As trees shed their leaves and their acorns, as the light shifts and glows, making room for spectacular sunsets and glowing days. And I think personally that it's as though the November light in all of its glory is saying, look what I have for you, what gifts, what ebullience. Knowing all the while that we're marching toward the solstice, that in the midst of what feels like death, we're actually moving towards the shortest day of the year in late December, and it's not long before the days begin to get longer again. And that, of course, portends new life. And that's the rub. If we only see death as loss, we lose access to the beauty of right now. And there is beauty, profound beauty. As people approach death, and I'm overgeneralizing, but it's true, there are certain questions asked. Who have I not made peace with, including myself? Do I have regrets? Have I done and loved the way I would have hoped? We ask the deep questions and we hear the true answers. And we stop lying even to ourselves because there's no use in doing so. We let go of our masks, the secrets we've kept, and maybe the shame we've carried. And in that moment of death, because I've seen this enough time to know its truth, bodies let go of their human forms, and souls, whatever they are, wherever they go, it's a release. I've experienced it as light moving, as joy rolling in, and as love in abundance. The physical act of death is a struggle too, as is birth. Bodies work hard to leave the mortal form, just as they do to enter this world. But as Americans, that's where the conversation ends, that in physical death, in the inability to touch that person. All of these celebrations ask for something different. To believe that it's not the beginning or the end, but part of a much larger cycle. We logical people, we want to believe we know the answers, and I'm way guilty. We want to know what's life and what's death. But what if there's a sign, and this is so Unitarian, what if there's a sign with a question mark? Asking what lies beyond what we actually know. And so I ask, what would it take, look like, feel like for us to move towards that mystery, towards the questions and into the possibilities? Do our ancestors, as many faiths hold true, do they play a role in our life day to day now? Not as puppet masters, but as guides and tutors. And at the other end of the spectrum, anyone that's ever given birth or watched a baby being born, can you attest that that baby seems to come out somewhat a fully formed person, like they already kind of are who they are, right? We rational beings want to explain this, and we can't, or I contend we can't. There are times you walk into a room, and I am talking about ghosts here, so bear with me. And your body, the hair on the back of your neck, knows that something not in human form is there. That there's a presence you can't name. The moments when we feel guided by forces we cannot see. And it doesn't make sense. And here's the fun part, it doesn't have to make sense. In true Unitarian Universalist form, I ask you to search your faith while offering you zero answers. Our job is to live and to love, as Rumi says, into the questions themselves. From that place of purposeful not knowing, of opening to divinity outside of the realm of our logical minds, call forth that memory you were holding before. And feel, if you can, the very thin line between your heart and theirs. Or perhaps you find no separation at all. And feel free to leave your eyes closed if they're closed. And I'll close with the words of Tess Barnberger, titled Drops of God. God is the journal of time marching through eternity. She is waking of seasons, phases of moon, movements of stars. She is grandmother, mother, daughter. She is transcending spiral of ages, whose every turn encompasses the rest. History a mere babe balanced on her hip. She is spinning of universes and ancestors of infinites. She is memory, she is presence, and she is dream. And we are brief instants, intersections, nanoseconds, flashing gold hope moments in eons of her. May we each and all have the opportunity and bravery to allow ourselves to be pulled into the spinning of presence and to catch, even for a moment, those gold-hoped moments of connections with the larger universe. May it be so.